Is this thing on? Hello, hello. Welcome to Open Pike Night. I'm your host, John T. Bolds, here tonight with some amazing guests on stage and in the studio to discuss Episode 8 of Strange New Worlds, The Elysian Kingdom. Join us tonight for our first Open Pike Game Night. The audience has been asking for an RPG game while they listen to our guests on stage. And I know what you're thinking. John, that sounds like a complete disaster. But trust me, you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll cry some more, you'll ugly cry, you'll think about it later and probably cry some more. Join us as we discuss the high adventure, just how many kingdoms there are on the Enterprise, which actors had to have had the most fun with their roles, and truly the most important question, how much of your Paramount Plus subscription each month goes to the candle budget for Strange New Worlds? Joining me today are my co-hosts, the man who knows when the time is right to fight and when the time is right to cower in front of Queen Uhura, host of Sudden But Inevitable, Jesse.
I have armed myself.
And the man who knows how to fully respect the magic of science, but wouldn't say no to some powers, host of Green Shirt, A Newbie's Trek Through TNG, Cam.
My dopamine levels are high, and I'm ready to say the thing. All the things.
And today we have a special guest, the best of the Midwest, who will take you on a quest, a founder of Twist Firearm Network, and host of Quest Me, Josh.
Art thou ready to party?
How are you doing today, Josh?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to be here.
What's your history of Star Trek?
I mean, it's, I don't know, man. My dad got me hooked on it when I was a kid. He had the original, I always want to say the original trilogy because that's who I am. But he had the original series on VHS. And so, like, it was all these brown cases that had, like, a little piece of paper in it that had a description for each episode. And when I was a kid, I would watch a lot of the original series that way. But then he was a big Next Generation fan, so I watched that with him. And then he introduced me to Star Wars. And it kind of, I kind of fell out for a while. But recently, like, I've been watching pretty much all the new stuff that's coming out. It's great. I love Discovery. I really liked Picard. I'm really enjoying Strange New Worlds. So
good. Well, we're glad to have you join us tonight for Open Pike Night. We're going to start out the night with our first guest on stage, who is a new caller.
Hello, Open Pike Night. This is Adam of Geekheim. I've never called before, but there is an ember of thought in my mind that I had to share, so you all can tell me how crazy I am. 2 weeks ago, we had the obvious reference to Star Trek V with Cybok's reveal. I think they may have snuck an allusion into this week's show also for Star Trek V. Dr. Mbenga is a doctor that doesn't have the ability to cure an ailing family member, but he is presented with a silver bullet, but one that will result in his not being able to see his daughter again. In the episode, we get to see that she is happy and living a good life. But what if next week's episode has a doctor friend of Mbenga's message him saying that they have found a cure for his daughter's affliction? Now, this isn't nearly as bad as Dr. McCoy pulling the plug on his own father, only to have a cure found very soon after. But still, it's not great missing your daughter growing up. So, what do you guys think? Do you think that they would have done back-to-back Star Trek V references? Let me know. Thanks.
That was Adam at Adam of Geekheim on the 3Ts, Twitter, Twitch, and TikTok. Thank you for calling in. Welcome to the Open Pike Night, Adam. So, Jesse, what'd you think of the way they dealt with Rukia's storyline?
Okay, well, yes, let me say thank you for calling. We appreciate having you. How dare you bring additional tragedy to our doorstep? What are you trying to do to me? Like, I'm plenty sad about this already, okay? In a happy way, right? At this point, though, all bets got to be off, right? Like, they showed us a dead kid being pulled out of the dead kid machine and a new kid being plugged into it. And then they gave us this. So I think anything is possible now, right? They could do anything from here on out. Now, what I do really like is there being sort of an emotional plot style homage to a TOS character without it being a direct, exact copy of that, but I think there are definitely meant to be hints of TOS throughout almost everything they do in this show. So I would not be surprised to find out that they were like, oh, let's do, you know, some sort of a McCoy parallel with M'Benga. And yeah, I was a mess at the end of this episode. So if they do that, if they do your suggestion, I will just probably die.
Yeah, I want to say thank you for calling in or reaching out for your first time. Also, thank you for making that Star Trek V connection, because I also had a Star Trek V connection, which I completely forgot till I heard your message. And it's not, there was no Star Trek V connection for me. I wanted it. I wanted to see Queen Nev, Uhura's Queen Nev, with some fancy dagger fans or something. I wanted a fan reference. And my second watch, I was like, I bet it's there. And I looked, I saw no fans, just the awesome, crazy, awesome dagger fingers. No, I think that's a good point. What I was thinking along those lines, and we'll talk more about the finale, which, again, ugly crying, I'm very pleased with, but I have some complex emotions about. And one of them is like, M'Benga, you know, there is a cure out there. This isn't a case of you going like, I don't know if this is even possible. Like, you know that another society has cured this. You know it is possible and it is a matter of time. So, I mean, I think you're right that those that feeling, I mean, that's put into the sacrifice, right? Whether it's, you know, this previous cure that he's heard of, or maybe, you know, next episode or next season he finds something, like, it's there. That's the weight of the choice he has to make, which they set up in the very first scene. Yes.
And we had mentioned it earlier in our season. We went, oh, they're going to make M'Benga make this choice again, right? Because the first time that he had an option to protect Rukia or protect the crew, he protected Rukia. And I was like, yeah, go for it. Like, I get it. Totally do that. But I really appreciate that he recognizes in this episode, you know, I can't be the one to make this choice. I have to let her make this choice. Cameron, are you saying that when you think of Uhura, you think of only fans?
Look, last episode just planted Star Trek V in my head, and when I think of Star Trek V in Uhura, I think of fans.
Gotcha. Only.
Only.
Look, I have no shame. I'm not sure how old Nichelle Nichols was in The Final Frontier, but the fact that they allowed an older black woman to be that sexy, I mean, I'm going to chalk that up as a win.
Yeah, I think they probably couldn't have stopped her, but I agree 100%.
In late 80s for that. I mean, I think that scene is not shabby.
Agree.
I had to just look up the plot of Star Trek V because it's been a long time.
A lot of people who even really like Star Trek had to look up the plot of Star Trek V.
But yeah, the whole Cybok thing, when I heard that name, I was like, that sounds so familiar. Who is that?
Let's hear from our next caller on stage, also new to the Open Pike Night stage.
Hello, my name is Danielle. Twitter handle Sayadina Heresy. I'm a first-time caller, but have enjoyed many Star Trek conversations with the hosts at Open Pike. I appreciate very much their encouragement for me to send in a recording. So I love this episode so much. I was expecting fun fairy tale hijinks, but instead got my heart ripped out. Well played, Strange New World writers. Well played. What was amazing was how this episode focuses on the nature of story itself, a meta-narrative. M'Benga and his daughter go on this adventure together, and it is through story that they are both transformed. This is what story can do for us. I just love that Rukia was able to transcend and go on a life of boundless storytelling quite literally, encouraging her father to do the same. We often see fairy tales as a children's world, silly and unrealistic, coloring the world with roses, but this is a fallacy. We are only truly ready for them when we are old enough and wise enough, when we can remember that a story's power gives us a glimpse through the veil of the world beyond, speaking to a reality deeper and truer than the one we see with our two eyes every day. Stories, and especially fairy tales, reveal the veins of gold that are laced in the mundanity of our world, but perhaps it will take a faith of a child to see. I'll finish with a quote by British author and theologian C.S. Lewis. The imagined beings have their inside on the outside. They are visible souls, and a man as a whole, man pitted against the universe, have we seen him at all till we see that he is like a hero in a fairy tale.
That was Danielle, first time caller on the Open Pike Night. at Sayadina Heresy on Twitter. Anybody out there listening, if you think, man, it would be fun to be on Open Pike Night, just send us an audio clip. We want to hear from everybody. Thank you, Danielle, for joining us. Thank you for bringing up how important this story has been since episode one. They've been setting up this entire storybook for the entire season.
I would like Cameron to speak to this call first if he doesn't mind, but I would also like to say, can you guys tell why I encouraged Danielle to send a clip? I mean, like, wow, right? Yes.
That was the most poetic calling I've ever heard.
This is one of those things where I was like, this person has to share their thoughts in their own voice, and I am so happy to hear that you have done so. But please, Cameron, go ahead.
That was a great call. Thank you for calling in. I did not even think of like that power of story element to it, but you were 100% correct. That's all throughout this. I think the word I used most was like, I delighted by this episode, until you're not. I mean, you're still delighted, but in different ways. And just that the tone handling in this episode is so masterful. I mean, I know Jesse will agree with me. It's on the level of James Gunn, right, Jesse? Guardians of the Galaxy 2 connections one could be made. I cannot. No, yeah, no. Deborah is definitely a celestial. Ego, I am now certain, is a Boltzmann brain, which is a real thing. I Googled it. There's a whole Wikipedia page on the Boltzmann brain.
And I'm sorry.
There's not real God. I mean, maybe there are, but it's a real theoretical thing. Yes. Which apparently the A&R are just like pulling from like 18th century human scientists or theologians.
Did you miss that Hemmer would in this case be Mantis? Like, he has antenna and is used as a channel. Like, come on, man. You're the Guardians fan in the room.
I was setting you up, Jesse. I'm letting you spread your Guardian wings and fly.
I see now that it was a trap. But Cameron is right. If you are subscribed to the Open Pike Night Crew Manifest, the latest issue, issue 8, the submission reminder for the Elysian Kingdom, does in fact reference the wild swings in tone that this episode takes. And it's like, it starts out with such it's like, oh, I have seen this Star Trek episode before. I've seen the malfunctioning holodeck or the, society that is for some reason the same as Victorian era Britain that they have to go to. Like, yep, I've seen the funny, kooky Star Trek episode, right? And so they give you that full expectation by having everyone play almost opposite to their character. I love pathetic Pike. Like, that's just,
yes. Oh yeah. That was so much fun. We're going to hear from a lot of callers on stage tonight about Pike and who he plays.
Yeah.
Pathetic Pike.
But to that point of narrative and its importance, I mean, Strange New Worlds keeps feeling like it's accidentally perfectly timed for things that are happening in the real world, right? The thoughts that are associated with all of real life are part of what creates our fiction, right? That's why the power of narrative is important. And for this to end the way it does with Mbenga saying, look, it's your choice. Here's an option. What do you think? And she goes, yeah, that's what I want. It sounds good. And then we get the payoff of knowing that it doesn't hurt and that, you know, she gets this whole other life. I think that power of narrative is definitely a strong theme that I wasn't sure I was picking up on directly until I heard Danielle mention it.
I'd like to hear it come to our Twitter or any social medias, like based on the trailer, because obviously the scenes from this were some of the most memorable from the trailer. Like, oh, they're going to be in some holodeck-like hijinks. There's some fantasy story going on. Did anyone think it was going to be coming from the storybook that Mbenga's been reading? Like, did anyone make that connection before this episode?
As far as the storytelling aspect and the characters in the story aspect, I was trying to think about it like, okay, Mbenga is the reluctant RPG player joining the game. Like, no, he knows the story. Mbenga drugged himself. So Mbenga is the kid who stays home sick from school and decides to pick up an RPG he's already finished before and decides to play a different. He's like, all right, I guess I'll get back into this. And yeah, I've done this. And then starts to get into the story more and more. Hemmer is the brand new RPG player who's like, all right, I guess I'll play this. And then just gets into it. Yes. The whole, like, fully gets into it. And I love both of those. So we've got our next caller on stage who has some stuff to say about that.
Hi, this is Peter. And here are my thoughts about episode 8, The Elysian Kingdom. This episode currently ranks as my third favorite of the season. It reminded me of Cupid, TNG's Robin Hood story, and other holodeck adventures. It was fun seeing the crew playing various Renaissance characters, some against type. Mount's Chamberlain, Chong's Princess, and Gooding's Queen in particular were very different than Pike, La'an, and Uhura. It was evident all the actors were having fun. My favorite aspect was the focus on M'Benga and Hemmer. Over the previous seven episodes, I felt those two characters did not get much screen time compared to the rest of the crew, so it was great to have them save the day. I also liked the costumes and set dressing. Everyone wore elaborate and detailed costumes, and we saw various sets with greenery and other natural accents. The only thing I wish the episode could have done relates to the ending scenes between M'Benga and Rukaya, which was the emotional core of the story. I wish we could have had an additional scene or two between them before young Rukaya left. Also, I would have preferred we did not see adult Rukaya and instead leave her arc more open-ended to be revisited in the future. Overall, this was an enjoyable story as we reached the home stretch of season one. Thanks and live long and prosper.
That was our old friend Peter at PeterTrek1 on Twitter and host of My Star Trek Life on Spotify, joining us again on the Open Pike Night stage. Josh, what'd you think about the characters being played so opposite of who they normally do? Who's your favorite?
I would have to say, the pilot. I always forget her name.
Ortegas?
You can't Ortegas. Do that on this show. Sorry.
I loved Ortegas.
You want to retake that?
Yeah. Just say, I love Ortegas. I need hashtag Mortegas, and then we'll just delete this part.
So Ortegas is definitely my favorite because of her sword play. And she's just a little badass the whole time. Like, I know that she gets a good amount of screen time through the series, but I feel like this was probably her best episode. Mm-hmm. To me at least, I loved the way that she just kind of was all about it. He's my king. I will protect him with my life. Yep. And especially that kind of final scene where, you know, she picks up her sword and he's like, wait out here while I go and check this thing out. And she's like, with my life. I thought M'Benga's character was just going to be hallucinating the whole time from that explosion at the beginning.
It was such a good red herring.
Right.
And he goes on there, and Ortega doesn't have the wound on her head anymore. So you're like, yep, 100%, this is like just going to be his imagination. I'm already like getting disappointed.
That's exactly what I thought. Like, he just made some new space mushroom. And he's like, whoa, this is the best trip I've ever been on.
And he even acknowledges that right away, right? He's like, I did have a chemical explosion happen in my face recently. So let me check on this. What I love about this, and you know what? I'm going to go ahead and call it right now. I think Michelle called in and said she likes that M'Benga doesn't trust that the universe is correctly set up the way that Dr. Crusher doesn't trust that the universe is correctly set up. In, I believe the episode is called Remember Me, or?
Yes, Remember Me.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that's the connection that Michelle will make this week. But I love that we have another no-nonsense doctor here. He's like, look, I'm sleep deprived. I'm emotionally compromised. But this is some wacky bullshit. Yeah. Like, there's no way that this is how things are. So I'm going to figure this out. Despite being sleep deprived and emotionally compromised, which is probably true to life for a doctor anyway, right?
Even with that, he's still on the first scene in the bridge. He's like, I got to get my magical device. He still starts role playing.
He has a daughter. He knows that you got to pretend sometimes.
Yeah, he's had practice with that. Yeah, no, the competency porn, again, is just like at an 11 this episode.
Oh, man.
From him, he goes up there. Yeah, first thing, okay, chemical, everything Jesse just said. Okay, doesn't seem to be that. Well, I know I got to play along anyway. But also from the rest of the crew, even in their like mind-controlled fantasy character states, like, they're listening to what to them is just gobbledygook coming from the magician and their king, and they're just rolling with it. Like, okay, so we heard him? That's what we do now? Like, it's so much fun. One, like, tiny thing I wish there'd been a little bit more of a beat of him, like, trying to kind of help the people around him logic it out. Like, well, what are these walls made out of then? Or I think there could have been some fun there, but this is also just one of those episodes I would have loved to have seen the writer room notes on, because I mean, most of my like notes are like, I would have liked to see this and this and this and this and this. Oh, yeah, there's just not enough time to do it all. They must have come up with so many fun ideas.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we never even got the scene where someone holds up a phaser and goes, this is my phaser stick.
Yeah, I loved seeing like, oh, we have immediately another detective doctor. Like we've come to be such good, fans of Beverly Crusher and Mbenga. Same thing, full on detective mode right away, but also gets into the story. I gotta hand it to Christina Chong. She doesn't have a huge part in this episode.
If I may channel Jesse just for a real quick moment, La'an is having so much fa'an here. She adores this part.
We need to ask, were there two characters who didn't get affected by the nebula, or were there three? Because the nebula did not seem to create any new people on board, which means the dog exists. Do we think the dog was playing the role, or do we think the dog was just like, I have no idea what's going on. I'm wearing a cape all of a sudden. My mom is being super weird and singing, but I'm here for it.
He was in the same room as that dust with the doctor, with Mbenga. He was in there and got a little dust in his snout, and he's tripping balls.
That dog has like the best cutaway too. There's a moment where like they're cutting to all the actors' confused faces, yep. And then it cuts to the dog. And that's when I was like, okay, this episode knows how to do a comedy episode.
Yes,
like, this is genuinely funny.
They finally hit their comedy stride. Yes.
Everyone, the directing, the writing, the acting, 100%.
For me, it was Mbenga's line when he goes, great, after La'an Sa'ang, which is where you should have gone.
Oh.
When Noonien Sa'ing's a Sa'ang. Come on. That was,
actually, the way nurse
fun, but okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with that. Sorry.
Maybe, it's okay. Maybe that, it's okay.
I was putting my own spin on your joke setup.
I don't like how. Oh, okay. I thought you were trying to channel me, but okay.
No. Nurse Chapel's dopamine levels. How are their dopamine levels? Also.
Oh yeah, Jess Bush had a ton of fun in the background of this episode.
Going back to what some of Peter said, 100% thought of Cupid as well, and only like again, this is Cupid done right. Like I love that they're like, let's do Cupid, but actually make it good this time.
Yep.
The role reversals, right? Like TNG tried to do this episode with its second episode, right? With the Naked Now, where they're like, let's see all the all the characters behave very differently, even though you don't know who the characters are yet. And even episode 8 for most shows, this would be jumping the gun way too much. But Strange New Worlds has established their characters so well in just 8 episodes that they can do this episode, and it is amazing. Yes, I don't know who I. Every time I say who my favorite is, I mean it's Mortegas. I have hashtag Mortegas so many times in my notes, but she's also not really playing against type. She's just playing herself, and you know she's playing Ortegas the way Ortegas would love to play.
Right, right.
Yeah, but Anson Mount, La'an, everyone is just so funny doing what they do.
And the more I think about it, I think Spock kind of crawls into my brain as my favorite as well, because he was hilarious.
He loved that role. Jesse in our group chat was like, who does he remind me of? And I immediately said, oh, that's Alan Rickman as the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Yes.
A little bit. Absolutely. He also reminds me of like a sexier version of Eddie Munson from the new Stranger Things. I don't know. I was definitely questioning my sexuality a little with long-haired Spock. He is pretty damn fine. And then in the next scene, we got Uhura's Princess Maeve, and then my sexuality was immediately, I don't want to say corrected, that's not right, but returned to my base norm.
when Hemmer's trying to give the threats, and Spock just looks down and goes, he's bluffing. Those don't exist. He's still Spock. Even as a crazy, angry magician, he's still Spock.
And Hemmer does just get into it, right?
He's
He's like, okay, if this is how it's going to be, I will be that guy. Like, sure, let's go for it. I'm totally fine with that. That
works.
Magic
of science.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hemmer's an absolute gem in this episode.
That was one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
We have our next caller on stage. A familiar voice.
Hello, my favorite hosts, Cameron, John, Jesse, and smart, funny, amazing new guest, whoever you may be. It's probably not me. I'll be honest. It's Bloody Mary's this time. Sorry, people. I know you take this really seriously, but I fucking love drinking alcohol when I watch Strange New Worlds. And this was the perfect episode for it. Of course, you know that I have to start this off with Pike's hair. And it did not disappoint. We've got a middle part, people. a middle part, and it lasts. And I'll be honest, I gave Anson Mount a little bit of shit the last episode when I was hosting, but I give him props. He was fucking hysterical this episode. And this is the number one episode, in my opinion. I laughed through the first 3/4, and then I cried through the last 1/4. I mean, literally could not see through the tears in my eyes. The Mbenga story really didn't hit hard with me originally. I mean, it was there, and it was there as a tearjerker, but I thought it was going to last a lot longer, and the fact that they closed it up this episode, that was a big surprise, and I wanted it to last a little longer. Maybe that was what I was feeling at the end of it, that I couldn't believe that they had finished it so quickly. What do you guys think? Did they end it too soon?
All right. That was our friend Marcy and previous guest host at PNW Beetroot on Twitter and TikTok. So I've only watched this episode twice. I didn't do my usual 3 or 4 watchings in preparation. My first watch, I was really not happy with the adult Rukia scene. My second watch, I was like, oh, okay, that was actually the perfect way to end this episode. And I think what really struck it for me was we have talked again and again about how we wanted more episodic TV. And having a father lose his child, how could you not turn that into a very, very long, very dark, dramatic arc for another season and a half? And I think that it was a smart choice on the writers to say, okay, we're going to wrap this up and give him the emotional closure now so that he doesn't have to come back to it in the future. He can if he wants, we can if we want, but we don't have to wait and see him go through this crushing sadness for however long it takes.
And whenever they feel like casting new McCoy or, you know, whatever it is that their plan is, she could show up and tear his heart out again. Like, she's a Boltzmann brain being now. And so it's like, she can, you know, she does say to him, like, hey, this won't be the last time I see you, but don't worry, everything's cool. I'm happy. I don't feel pain. I have, like, just, I live in this world of imagination. Everything is great, right? And, wow. I think I said on Twitter, every time Strange New Worlds uses a child to ask me a deeper question, I end up just wrecked by the end of the episode. Like, I thought that Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach was rough. But yeah, to Marcy's point, I think this may have jumped in my rankings pretty high, pretty quickly. Because, yeah, I was, you know, just to spin all of the calls. Like, yeah, I'm like, oh, this is a Q-Who episode. Amenka is not a merry man. I love it. It's great. Oh, no. Oh, no. But you knew that from the start because it starts with him reading to her. And I was like, oh, this is going to be bad. And our friend Marcy in the group chat, watching her text her way through this episode as she watched it was the most enjoyable thing. She's like, oh, fun, an Mbenga episode. Oh, something's going to happen to his daughter. Oh, it's like a holodeck thing. And then we just like sat back and watched her spiral emotionally.
Well, so, this is like so rapid fire text, bam, bam, yeah. Bam, bam. Yeah. And then there's like a 15, 20 minute break.
That's where she went to make Bloody Marys. So I'm really glad. Now, to Marcy's point about the middle part, that's how you know something is wrong with this character, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's Hollywood screen code for there's something bad about this character. They'll probably betray you. That or having their hair pushed to the left, I think, is the other way to code that somebody is evil.
And as we saw in the flashback to the page of the actual character from the storybook, it could have been worse. It could have been a well-level bowl cut.
Now, if I have a complaint about this episode, it is that, sure, give me the flashes to the pages of the characters I haven't seen him read about. I don't need a flashback to the page from 3 minutes ago at the start of this episode.
I don't need the ones to the people we haven't seen. It didn't add anything, and seeing our favorite characters in those costumes was far more interesting getting pulled to it. Like the first time I watched it, I was kind of just neutral. The second time, I really bumped on those. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, he figures it out so quickly that I agree. It's like, why do we keep flashing to these pages?
It's not like the image tells us anything about the characters we need to know. Like he says their name and we're like, okay, they're a character from the book.
Yeah,
right. Move on. Let's see them be goofy.
Just like everyone else in this episode.
Exactly. Marcy, you had threatened not to send in a submission this week. Thank you so much for doing it. That was a delight. I mean, Bloody Marys, it seems like it should have been mead or wine. But, you know, otherwise, thank you so much for sending those thoughts in. Yeah. So Adult Rukia, I mean, the whole ending, I was kind of on two minds, like I said. So intellectually, I'm thinking, this is happening a little fast. There's not really a lot of stakes here. Would he really do this? Would he trust this god being to have the same definitions of life and pain that we do? Adult Rukia, this is a little silly. While I'm thinking these thoughts, I'm just brushing so many tears away from my eyes. Like, I mean, obviously it's working, Cameron. Just shut up and get out of your own way. It's Star Trek silly, and it works. And it was so good, the way that they took me from genuine guffaws to just tears.
I have two things that I feel I have to share that I don't think I've said yet just about this part of the episode. The first thing, of course, being that my new favorite children's character is Debra the Nebula, and I will be writing a series of picture books that you can purchase. And I keep going back to something that Nurse Chapel said to our friend Spock, and she said, don't try to be smarter than the truth to him, I think with reference to Pring and how he's feeling and things like that. And that really struck me because I think there is a tendency, especially when watching a thing for analytical purposes, as we do here at a podcast about a TV show, right? But I have slightly modified that for myself to be, don't try to be smarter than the fun, which I think is a thing that I have caught myself doing in the past where I'm like, oh, here's a reason I don't like this, or here's a reason I don't like this. And I'm not trying to say anybody's way of watching anything is invalid or experiencing it, of course. But for me, I think the way that I'm watching each episode is I'm realizing I need to let go of what I think they might do and just watch what they do and be, you know, then react to that. And to that point, I am continuously blown away by this show.
I will say, since this is kind of the first God being episode where they for Strange New Worlds, it was really refreshing not to have to explain basic morality and humanity to a godlike being. I'm like, yeah, you know what? M'Banga understands. Debra gets it. He doesn't need to give Debra a big old speech about what it means to be a parent or care for somebody. So that was really, I was refreshed by that.
Yeah, this was my other TNG connection, was like another classic Star Trek god being. And I really did have to wonder if Debra the Nebula was related to Kevin the god being from TNG. Because they seem to have the same basic powers. Maybe he's Rukia's son. I don't know.
Yeah.
Cameron, does everything really have to be connected for you to enjoy it? I mean, doesn't that just make Star Trek smaller? Really?
Damn it.
Nice.
But how many god beings are out there, really? I mean, at some point, we do need to kind of start pulling them together.
It's a big universe. I do have a question, though, you guys. If there were going to be a theoretical, spontaneous, functioning organ in space named after you, what would it be? Because I think mine would be a Bailey bladder, and it would just be like full of superheated gases. I don't know what it would do, but that's how it would exist. It would just have like a giant mouth on the front of it, I think.
Are we married to the alliteration?
Yeah, because the bold bones, when you run across my giant skeleton space, yeah, you're going to be terrified.
Yes, I love it. And it's because of Boltzmann brain. It's not my fault, Cameron. I don't make the rules.
Yeah.
I think I would just be the Harrison hair because I've had very hairy legs my whole post-pubescent life. So just a big ball of hair out there in space.
Mr. Spock, what is this follicle field that we seem to be entering?
Oh, my God. Oh, they fire phasers into it. Can you imagine the smell? Oh,
there's no smell in space. Oh, the Harrison hair will find a way.
I'd be that part of whatever that forgets everything all the time, that just can never remember names. That part of your brain, you know, that one little part in your brain that's just obnoxious. Whatever you call that, name it after me. The Matson.
If you type part of the brain where into Google, the first suggestion is memories are stored. So it would be the Matson hippocampus, which is...
Yes. Okay.
And its whole purpose would be to not function, right? You would be like, oh, look,
yes.
No activity, Captain.
We had a guess from Jesse. Cam, you got any guess as far as what Michelle might have brought with the Crusher connection this week?
I mean, Jesse's is really good. My only other one I was thinking of is going back to the role-playing and the costuming. Obviously, Beverly loves to do that. She loves to get into character. So another connection with the doctor here. I mean, she might have been more of the himmer here, like kind of reluctant at first and then like, you know what? Let's do this.
Let's find out.
Heed me, Open Pike Knight. Henceforth, I declare that Strange New World shall have at least one episode a season that is as comedic and delightful as this one, with a slightly soul-crushing ending. And... I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. Hey, Open Pike Night. I hope you guys are doing well after that rough ending. I know that episode 6 was tough and just sending positive vibes and can't wait to hear your reaction. But really, what's not to love about this episode? The actors rose to the comedic challenge and the production value. Can we talk about that for a second? The costume design, the music, everything was such high quality. I wish I could highlight all the actors too. And particularly Mbenga and his journey, I was surprised that his daughter's storyline was wrapped up so quickly in the series, but I was satisfied with it, and I can't wait to see what's next for him. I'm definitely interested in his character. I thought he was fabulous in this episode. Hemmer is definitely growing on me. I thought he did wonderful in this episode. Queen Uhura, Wizard Spock, Ortegas was great, although we need more real Ortegas. I'm glad she wasn't seriously hurt. Una, La'an, Anson Mount, knocking it out of the park. I could go on, but I'm running out of time. So the Beverly Crusher connection would have been nice to see her wield a sword in Cupid, much like Ortegas did in this episode, especially since Gates McFadden had training in fencing and swords play. So there you go. See you next week. Live long and prosper, guys.
That was our guest, Michelle at OnTheRock81 on Twitter and currently creating Picard and Crusher Watch, the Strange New World series on Twitter.
I believe the proper term is swordiography, but I'm going to give this win to Cameron because he memed this already on Twitter at Greenshirt87. Well done, Cameron.
I did see that.
I did, just watching Una and Ortegas have so much fun being the badasses they are. I was like, why did Troy and Crusher get pots in Cupid?
Okay. Yeah.
Speaking of, she shot 3 people with arrows. Yes. And then Mbenga goes, let's do something before somebody gets seriously hurt.
You were like, the doctor.
Yeah. He just does not care.
Good with arrow wounds, those are fine. But if somebody's going to get actually hurt...
Did those guys die?
Well, they all got conveniently hit in the shoulder, which I am sure Deborah the Nebula pre-planned. But yeah. this is my big bump. This is like the one scene where I bumped on. Because neither Hemmer nor Mbenga knew that at this time. For all they knew, Ortegas, one of their crew members, was rushing to some other crew members and that these Crimson Guards were going to be appropriately named as the red shirts of this episode and about to get run through. And they both just stood there and said nothing the entire scene. And for me, that really did kind of suck the energy out of what was some great choreography from Ortegas. Yes. So much fun there. I really want to see Melissa Navia be part of the Willow series coming up and the new Rings of Power series coming up because she looks fantastic with a sword. But yeah, I mean, this scene, I mean, my only problem with this episode are the stakes. And sometimes the stakes get kind of muddled, like Hemmer and Benga here should have been a little more concerned about the lives of the crew members. Also agree with Michelle. Hemmer, I don't want to say he's been my least favorite because I've enjoyed him. I enjoy all the characters, but he has been low on the totem pole until this episode. He is a delight to watch this episode.
I'd say we've had very little access to him compared to the other characters in the series.
Yeah. Well, he's been a very kind of tropey character up until now when we have seen him. He's been the grumpy engineer, the holier-than-thou alien, just getting to see him cut loose a little bit was so much fun. And then just, real quick, of course, the production design was amazing. maybe to be a little smarter than the fun again. And these things I did not bump on, but they're classic Trek tropes. Like, oh, very convenient that Deborah the Nebula chose all the bridge crew and the crew members we know to take these lead roles in the story. Very convenient there. And then, like, obviously she has the power to just pull a Cupid and put them in the Elysian Kingdom. But it was much more interesting to look at to see the Enterprise decorated. So I'll give that a 100% pass.
Well, it's also possible, and I don't know that this was necessarily intoned by Deborah the Nebula, but it's also possible that. You're welcome, and I can't help how in love with it I am. it's possible that as soon as she recognized that Rukia was being held prisoner, right? Mm-hmm. Like, which she said, it's possible that she went, oh, I'm going to show her dad why he shouldn't be doing this. Not, you know, oh, vengeance for Rukia, but like, maybe he needs to be shown that she should be able to have a say in her treatment, et cetera, sort of a thing. Or just, you know, not be so lonely, you know, if it gets as simple as that. But I really, for a moment, I was like, I feel like there are more people on the bridge now than usually there are once the first change happens. But any of this can easily be explained away with the setting, right? Like, oh, well, the bridge is where the castle would be. And to that point, Cameron, did you love this Tolkien-esque map of the Enterprise that we got with little hand-drawn mountains, etc.?
I want that on my wall.
I really like the subtle callbacks to Starfleet, right? So the realm that they're on the bridge has like this sort of multi-pointed star emblem as their emblem. And it sort of looks like a super deformed Starfleet Delta pattern and then just repeated over itself a few times. And then, of course, you have the different colored banners for the different kingdoms. Blue for what's on the bridge, red for Uhura's kingdom, and yellow for Princess Talia's realm. So you've got ops, sciences, and command, you know, the three colors. There's so many subtle details for nerds to be like, I feel like such a happy nerd right now. And it also legitimizes everybody who ever went to a Renaissance fair wearing a Starfleet uniform, pretending they went to a planet that was stuck in the Renaissance times.
Yep. So,
and the opposite is now true. Now you can wear your pirate costume to a Trek convention.
Yeah, and be like, this is the Elysian Kingdom, bro.
Exactly. Be like, have somebody put on a pink tutu and follow you around and be like, that's Deborah the Nebula. We're the crew. We're stuck in the Elysian Kingdom episode.
It was fun, again, seeing Hemmer, seeing Manga, seeing Ortegas. We got our three least featured characters as our most featured characters. And yes, hashtag Mortegas. We always want to see Mortegas. This was basically, like Cam said, this was Ortegas just in cosplay. Like, it was fun that they didn't switch her character around.
Yes.
They're like, no, everybody loves her. Just let her play herself with a sword instead of a phaser. I will say, Ortegas, that's why they have seats and seatbelts. Don't stand up if it's not a standing desk. This could have all been easily avoided.
I would say, would this be Ortegas' episode? Because a few episodes back, I think someone had mentioned that, you know, each episode gets like a particular crew member and it kind of dives into that character. Would this be Ortega's episode, kind of? Because she
don't learn much about her, I wouldn't say. Yeah. I mean, this is Mbinga's episode, right?
Right. But it's the most Ortega's that we've gotten, to your point. Yeah. But it is, we didn't get,
you're right,
we didn't get any of her backstory or anything like that. But
they've also broken that a little bit with some of the past few episodes.
The last couple episodes, for sure.
So is it possible that we don't get Ortega's like POV episode till season two, you guys?
That
because
be
what
rough.
The hell?
It's going to be the finale. It's going to be the best episode is what it's going to be.
I'm 100% okay with that. Just make her a fan favorite that we're curious about. Like, she is a great character without some traumatic backstory. I eventually want to know her backstory, but we don't need it yet. Like, let's save it till we can really savor it. And like, and also, I mean, I forget if I've mentioned this before, but like, they already wrote season two before this one came out. Like,
they just
they're
finished
not getting
filming season two, I think.
Yeah. They're not getting like fan feedback. They're not really seeing like the chemistry between a lot of the actors and like how they can go. Like, that's one of the nice things. Like, yes, season one of TNG, not great, but they had a season or two for them to go like, oh, these character pairings work. Oh, the audience wants to see this. Let's do that. And I think that's why you see the drastic uptick in quality in like seasons 3, 4, 5 of TNG. And with the shorter episode count and like the, you know, shorter gap between filming seasons, like they really need to have a plan going into these. And so far we've seen that they have, but like, I'd like them to kind of like let Ortegas breathe before they decide what to do with her, is the short way of saying that.
I will accept a delay to season 2 for Ortegas' backstory, as long as in season 3 we get a completely different Ortegas' backstory, and every season it's like...
She's like the Joker.
Who the hell is... Yeah, exactly. She's like... How old is she? Good God, what has this woman done?
Turns out she's actually a Noonien Singh. And
she is actually Miles O'Brien. She just becomes Miles O'Brien in the future.
And speaking of chemistry, Ortegas and Una.
Oh, yes. That's the backstory I want.
Really well?
Yeah. How many fanfics were probably created in the first 30 minutes?
I made
of this
at least
episode?
Two of them.
Yeah. The difference between how Ortegas is normally played and how, you know, Adia was played, I think was just that there was like slightly fewer constraints on the character, right? Because Ortegas, they're like, you're on a starship, you have a job, you just just fly the ship. It's cool. Because the enthusiasm from Ortegas is so palpable, right? So there's like this attempt to keep the pilot energy contained. And here they're like, no, just be that character with a sword. And it's like, I really enjoyed that part of it. But yeah, to have just like a subtle, you know, little, oh, here's a fan fiction-y style romance that would exist in somebody's version of this story, right? Like, yeah, let's put that in there. And to have that be an important clue is huge,
yes,
right? For Mbenga to go, oh, I remember how my daughter wishes this story goes. Like, that shows a lot of really good things, not the least of which being that Mbenga, despite being spread thin like butter scraped across too much toast, he is paying attention to what his daughter feels and thinks and, you know, wants with this story. Like, he is still dedicating a solid portion of his being to that. So I think that just makes this all the more wonderful.
Yeah, let's just acknowledge, because it's kind of a throwaway line, how good a line, "You said you would call on me," a Renaissance version of "You said you'd call me" is. Yeah. That is chef's kiss.
And she's,
you could have
so,
at least sent a raven.
She's so nonchalant, is Una. She's like, look, the forest has a lot of stuff going on. You know.
Look, babe, I dedicated myself to the huntress of the forest, okay?
Yeah. I'm married to the forest. You know what that's like.
Also, I do want to spend a little time in the sick bay scene after they've figured out that what's going on and they're trying to find Rupia again, because it opens with Una walking out and Ortegas lamenting her returning to the forest. I'm like, did they just have sex? Because it kind of seems like they just had sex. And then while I enjoy the conversation and how compassionate Hemmer immediately is, I just love watching Jess Bush in the background playing around in a pot of dry ice. just be like, I'm going to be doing stuff while they talk.
Waving her hands around.
Oh, yeah.
In the perfect, most...
Yeah, background RPG character. Just, move your hands around and stuff happens.
And she's dressed in the most bar tavern wench from Spirit Halloween costume you could purchase, right? Like, but it's elevated beyond that, because it's a hand-woven, like, specially created version of that costume.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it looks the right amount of cheap, but it's so well made. And I just, the costuming and the hair and the makeup in this episode, there is a shot of Chapel where she turns around and she's got one eyebrow raised. And I'll tell you, it rivals The Rock. I'll put it on Twitter, but it's impressive. It's like, it's halfway up her freaking head.
Let's hear from our next caller on the Open Pike Night stage.
This is a UFP Newsnet editorial break. On-site reporter Zoe Richardson reporting from outside UFP headquarters. Strange story from the USS Enterprise. Is it true? According to reports, there are no recordings of the incident. Only Chief Medical Officer Dr. Joseph Mbenga's account can tell us what happened in the last 5 hours on the Enterprise. This reporter found his tale charming. The costumes he described are wonderful and vivid. The conclusion of his tale left me heartbroken yet hopeful. I'm glad there is an actual resolution to the doctor's daughter being in stasis. There are other questions, of course, but this reporter finds that Dr. Mbenga's story is credible. This is Zoe Richardson, outside UFP headquarters, from UFP Newsnet, returning you to your program.
That was regular guest and certified Open Pike Night superfan, Zoe of the Backlook Cinema podcast, at Backlook Cinema on Twitter. And Zoe, thank you so much. You're...
As delightful as this episode.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One thing I love about this episode, I mean, we've, and everyone's kind of touched on it, but I just want to talk about how important the actors having fun is. Like, that is palpable. And that, I mean, that's, Star Trek has a lot of comedy episodes and not all of them work, but they almost, you can almost always tell how much fun the characters are having. So even the episodes that don't work are still kind of fun just because that matters. Like, you can, it seeps onto the screen, and especially here. I mean, again, we've talked about it, but from every actor, just a joy to watch. Have fun.
I feel like Anson Mount has the most fun in this episode because he gets to not be a serious captain. He's just some cowardice asshole.
His little stamp in the jail cell is just... Yeah. Oh.
Yes, yes. And when he like pushes everyone out of the way to get out real quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
It also feels like at the start of this episode, like the way that he was thinking about his job might have been like the reason that he ended up as that character, right? Because he was like, wouldn't it be nice to just kind of be the opposite of what we are? Like, what if we were just out here being a science vessel, like sciencing it up, right? Like, what if this just... What
Spock
if,
is like...
And Spock's like, what are you talking about? You're gorgeous, but what are you
don't
talking
jinx
about?
It.
Yeah, like, I don't understand. And I love that they sort of like trick Spock into... getting called superstitious, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, that's a great exchange.
I will tell you about superstition so many times that I don't even have to bring it up. The next time you'll bring it up and then I can accuse you of being superstitious. So by the time Kirk arrives in Spock's life, Spock is well used to being teased by humans.
Yeah.
So
well, he knows how to tease back too.
Right.
I think.
Exactly.
That's what he's doing here.
Yeah. And we've seen him do it to other characters as well. So
yeah.
I gotta say, like, Zoe's submissions are, I love the creativity. I love that they match our like theme enough to keep the appearance up, which is just so perfect for this episode.
One thing that works really well about this episode is that it would almost work as just a straight telling of the Elysian Kingdom. Like, it's an interesting story, and like the dynamic, the humor between Anson Mount's Sir Ruth and Ortega's Sir Adia. I don't know why I'm changing actors and character names, but, you know, like, they're genuinely funny outside of like who their characters really are. Like, that dynamic is funny. And like the story of, oh, I don't know where our secret weapon is. My wizard does. And he just got captured. So we got to go rescue him to find that. Like, it would all be a compelling story. And I think those are some of the best like parodies where, yes, the parody's funny, but you got to make sure, like, even if you took all the jokes out, even if you took all the science fiction in this case out, it would still be a pretty good story.
Is this our first bottle episode?
I think so.
Like, no, but maybe.
Like, we get a shot of the Enterprise from outside, mm-hmm. but everybody is on the Enterprise
You're
for the
right.
whole episode,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
There was a mention of people being off the Enterprise at the beginning, exploring the nebula.
Right. And I was like, why is there a shuttle in the nebula? Where did they go?
Yeah, they go out there with jars to, like, they're just catching smoke in jars.
Spock says Uhura, yeah, finished collecting the buoys. That was the only
thing. I mean, you'd think they could do that with a tractor beam,
right?
But sure.
I mean, we
shuttles.
Have drones. It's a thing that happens.
To Zoe's kind of point of no one remembering, I mean, I did kind of, the whole episode I was waiting for the button at the end of, like, how is Captain Pike going to react to how
right?
he
yes.
behaved? Yeah. Like, I wanted to see those buttons. I get why they didn't. And then, like, yeah, you just want, like, a series of 10 buttons for each character, but yeah, right.
Well, and is it meant to indicate that maybe Una was, she hadn't forgotten completely because she knows that he has a daughter, right? So she's mm-hmm. like, dude.
Well, what that implies is that she kind of checks the pattern buffer every while to check on. Well, and
no
after a 5 hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. In this case, like, something mysterious happened. First thing she's going to do is check that pattern buffer.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe not first, but like, it's on the list.
Well, and after episode 3, where Mbenga was like, I choose her over all of you, it's fair for her to check on that.
Yeah,
sure.
I've had two thoughts. Like, it would have been fun if Hammer had remembered as well.
I get why they chose not to, with him having been possessed later on. But the dark side to that would have been M'Banga not remembering also, and then just going to the pattern buffer and being like, shit, where's my daughter?
So they could have made this
a very dark episode.
Fuck you, John Bolds.
Yes, that. And when he went to the pattern buffer and she wasn't in there, that was my first breakdown. I was like, oh, this is going to get real for like the rest of this episode. I'm going to be upset. Like, because I knew they wouldn't do it right in that moment, but I was like, they're prepping me to just do this, and I don't know that I'm ready for it. I almost woke my wife when I was watching this episode through sheer sobbing.
Well, that's where the stakes were kind of working for me, because like, yeah, we're just having like this fun romp for a while, and then suddenly, oh, she's gone. She's sick. She has, I mean, at the beginning, he says minutes left, maybe. I mean, we don't know how long, but it sounds like if she's out for a day, the cancer might overtake her.
Yeah.
And then we get cut to a scene of Uhura's Queen Neve saying like, she's the Mercury Stone, we need to capture her. Like, the stakes are coming down. Like, it felt like a really good ramping up the stakes, and then it kind of all just kind of dissipated. Like, Queen Neve, like, they could have made her this real obstacle and presence, but really she's just kind of like a temporary nuisance a couple times throughout. What I wanted to see, kind of going back to, I felt like the end was a little quick. I was like, well, M'Banga, no one's really in danger right now. Like, why don't you play with your daughter for a while? Like, if you're going to say goodbye, like, spend a day. Really, let's have a scene of you playing with your daughter, not just letting her watch you on some TV, some Nebula TV, Nebula One. or, like, let's really make the stakes high. And, like, yeah, Queen Nev's army is coming. He's got his army, and he's out there telling Sir Adia Ortega, like, look, you need to buy me some time, but do not kill anyone. And like, her have to be like, oh,
absolute
God.
Terminator 2 rules.
Exactly. Yeah, and so live, then you kind of have the sounds of this battle out there. And like, he knows, like, the ticking clock is on. He needs to make a choice. And now I think that could have juiced that ending just a little bit more.
In an episodic show, though, I can see why they took the path they did, because it's like, how much more time do they dedicate to that in particular?
And it's not much more time, I don't think.
But the Queen Neve character also is a children's storybook villain, right? Who's very ha 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 ha. So it's like, I took this to be like more of the Hobbit, so not quite the Lord of the Rings, if that makes sense, like from a narrative standpoint, right? Like, it wraps up.
Tilda Swinton's
quicker.
Ice Queen gave my wife nightmares. So
it's well, that's not the right movie at all.
No, I know, but that's even more children's book.
Right. I think that's more children's book than the Elysian Kingdom. I think Elysian Kingdom's closest counterpart would be The Hobbit, right? Like, it's intense, but it's still for younger readers. Whereas The Lord of the Rings is like, okay, this is a dedication in time and like changes your life once you've read it, right?
Hey, did you forget the deaths of three of the companion dwarfs in The Hobbit? The stakes are real. People die in that.
I didn't say the stakes weren't real. I said they were lower than they were in The Lord of the Rings.
Did you care about those dwarves?
Oh, Thorin? Feely?
I'm sure
Keely?
They sung a song about it like 17 goddamn times in The Hobbit.
While they're going down a river in some barrels.
It helped that
I
played Keely in a play in fourth grade, so yes,
just
I didn't care. But.
Okay, touche.
So was Queen Neve, mwahahaha, or was she more like, mwahahaha, whoa, wow, Queen Neve.
Yeah, I mean, I totally related with Sir Routh. Like, I will kneel and do whatever you want me to, Queen Neve. I am your servant. Yeah.
I loved his delivery of when she goes, all I ask is your loyalty. He goes, oh, like, oh, it's the opposite of M'Banga going, great.
Yeah. Like, also, M'Banga, when he, you know, when Anson Mount is like trying to dither behind, he's like, just come on. After they walk, like, I don't have time for your shit.
And he gets genuinely upset. He's like, so I actually probably should have known that he would betray us, because that is what happens in the book. Himmer is so chill. He's like, don't worry about it, dude.
Yeah, it
like,
happens.
Because he knows he's got this at this point.
Right, because he knows that he's literally got it in his pocket. So he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. It's fine.
This was an excellent episode. We have a couple more guests up on stage. Let's hear from our next person.
What's up, guys? It's Sirius. Skipped last week because I was feeling a bit under the weather, but I'm feeling better now, and I've had a ton of fun with this episode, so honestly, why not, right? Honestly, this episode felt like really just straight out of TNG. I've noticed that it does have a definitive next-gen vibe, and I enjoy that. I like the kind of mix between original series and next-gen. I love the costumes and the set pieces, the incorporation of the ship. It's not quite, you know, on-site, but that's fine. It's a mythical forest in space. Why not? I loved Manga. I loved Hammer. I loved Uhura as our badass evil queen. I honestly really do want to see a Hammer-centric episode at some point. Not sure when that's going to happen, but we'll see. I thought it was really great that the typical whole captain is the protagonist thing is gone. I am desperate to know who made the decision to make Pike the, you know, cowardly attendant, because I have to thank them for their service to this community. All in all, I had a great time with this episode. I hope y'all did too. That's about all I had. Bye, guys.
All right, that was our friend Sirius returning to the stage at Creator Sirius on Twitter. And yeah, we had some TOS and TNG vibes for this entire show. Cam, what do you think?
I mean, I agree. I've mentioned multiple TNG connections I made, and it's still Strange New World to still keep in with that TOS aesthetic. I mean, yeah, if you asked me what I wanted from the next Star Trek show, it would be, oh, could we cross TOS with TNG, please? And without even asking, they delivered.
I think as soon as this episode started, like, rolling, I was like, oh, great. It's another next generation, like, hallucinogenic episode where nothing's real that's going to happen. And it was kind of like that. Again, a mix between Next Generation and stuff. But by the end of it, I was like, okay, I really like this episode.
Yeah.
I'm not as upset as I was at the beginning.
Well, they gave it, because they gave it those stakes, I think, is why it ended up working. And to sort of steal something that Cameron said and reword it as my own point,
please,
I think that only works because these characters, we know them so well. Like, the reason that it was so funny to see Pike be this way is because we've seen him be just suave in every other situation, right? Like, he's been calm, cool, and collected, even though he knows he's hurtling toward a terrible fate. So it's like, what could shake this guy? Oh, having his mind altered to be somebody else could really do that for him. And it really does feel like TNG in the first thing that comes to my head is, I would love to see Captain Picard play a coward version of himself. Like, I think Patrick Stewart would eat that up. But I have to point this out again. Sirius, I think you are one of my emotional warrior co-spirits for Strange New Worlds. Every time you send some enthusiasm, my enthusiasm gets re-ratcheted. So thank you for continuing to listen and submit. I appreciate that big time. And yeah, you guys, this episode has been maybe the most pure fun, but it just is so heavy at the same time, which I think makes it more effective. Like, the fun, it makes the fun parts more effective, right? Because you're like, oh, they are gonna just sledgehammer my heart at the end of this. And that's why they're giving me all this fun leading up to it, because they know this is gonna hurt. Like, ow.
And they kind of left it open to bring her back later on, which in a way I kind of don't want that, because I really like how this ended and how her story ended, basically. And her kind of coming back to M'Benga and saying, hey, go write your own story now. I'm fine. I'm good. Whatever. I think my question to you guys would be, would you want another? Because they could easily bring her back for like a few episodes. You know, Deborah the Nebula has to help them through something, and she's there helping, right? Like on the ship, you know, getting them through whatever task. Do you think that would, like, lessen the impact of this episode if they were to do that in like a season 2 or 3?
Probably the most satisfying other story I could see from this is, I was thinking about it, like, okay, hey, Rukia has a friend. And I was like, oh wait, Rukia already made a friend, and that friend is strapped into a baby death machine. Ooh. On a planet, and Deborah the Nebula has the power to change the physics of that planet and make it so they don't need to. I'm like, Man, that would be, I didn't know Whoa. Starting Open Pike Night that I would be suggesting so many rewrites to this series, but I would be very satisfied with them going to rescue the first servant and take and have him join them as a incorporeal being, because that would actually be pretty badass.
I mean, that's a really cool idea, but that does kind of go against, hey, we're going to make an episodic Star Trek show, right?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah,
take
yeah,
two
yeah.
Separate episodic episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with anything, it's like, I mean, if they do it right.
Yeah.
My knee-jerk reaction to say, no, I mean, like, it's wrapped up. This was Mbinga's story. Like, we don't need to see her again. But, I mean, if they do it right, TNG had lots of times where, like, they had a random character and they're like, you know what? What if we brought him back and did something yeah. interesting? And it was good. And then there were times when they brought Leah Brahms back and it wasn't such a great follow-up episode. Yeah. So, you know, it all comes down to execution.
What if every time Deborah comes back, it has to create a fantasy setting on the Enterprise?
Now I'm sold.
Okay. Anyway. Something has been hardwired into her visits that's like, all right, we got to do this again.
It has to be upped every time, right? So next season it will... Well, and it will
be Wild West.
The next season will be a musical.
Yep.
The season after that will be a two-parter. Like, it just keeps going and going. I think that there's no reason not to do that. We could eventually have a parallel series.
And now the crew, in anticipation of the next time they run into Deborah the Nebula, like, are reading very specific books. They're like, this is the world I want to live in.
And that's how we get the Naked Now episode. Who was reading that?
I have banned 50 Shades from Grey from the Enterprise. It is
no
contraband.
One would remember, though. No one would remember anything. They lost all those right. hours. So, like,
which raises a lot of ethics questions.
Oh, man. But
yeah, it is a giant mind rape episode.
Oh yeah.
To John's point, that. Would you not watch Deborah the Nebula and the First Servant like save Christmas or something like? You know what I mean? Like, if she went back and got him and he was like, what are we going to do now, Deborah the Nebula? She's like, well, First Servant, you know, like, what would they do?
The Christmas lights won't work. And the First Servant's like, plug me in.
Paramount, we have your next Children's Trek series.
You're welcome, Paramount.
From that moment of levity, let's hear from our last guest and we can talk about any last thoughts we have about the end of this episode.
Hmm.
Hey, hey, Open Pike. It's Abby Summer from over at the First Flight Podcast. This episode, whew, I did not expect to need all of the tissues that I did at the end. From the promos and from the first part, I thought it was going to be a completely fun romp, which it mostly was. But what I really wanted to tell you guys my feelings on was the scenes with Mbenga and Rukia, the goodbye. And I'm a mother of two young girls, and this just broke me, and I was sobbing. I tell my girls, I love you always, just like he does. So when he did that for the last time, and to watch the control he had on his face to not lose it in front of her, I've been there as a mother. When you need to do something for them and to not show them how much it's killing you. And then when you watched his face when she disappeared, and I felt that viscerally. It was so powerful and unexpected, like I said, in this fun episode. But I really loved this one. The contrast of those two pieces and the costuming, of course. But wow, this was unexpectedly wonderful. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
That was Abby from the First Flight Podcast at First Flight Pod on Twitter with her third take of that audio clip, because she kept breaking down the first couple times she tried to send it in.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm close right now, just listening to it. And there are some very emotionally impactful episodes of Star Trek. I think this might be the most emotional Star Trek episode that exists to this point. This episode messed me up for a while after I watched it.
People that do have kids, they love their kids. And if I were to ever have kids, I would probably, I don't know, I broke down pretty hard on this one too, because it was very, very emotionally, like, just pow, there you go, kicking you in the balls. And but I think if I had kids, I probably would have lost it. I would have had to pause it and be like, you know, because it was rough. Like, I'm interested to see how you guys broke down over there, dads.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're both right. I think, John, I think you're right that it could be the most emotional one. And I think, to Abby's point, it all comes down to, and I'm sorry, I forget the actor's name, but Mbinga's acting. She's right. I was watching his face, and the scene that hit me was when Deborah the Nebula is telling him what he can do. And just in his eyes, you see that realization that he is hearing both the thing he's been waiting forever to hear, that there is a solution that she can live, and the worst thing he can imagine hearing, that he's going to have to say goodbye to his daughter forever. Both of those things are true in that moment. And you see that realization in his eyes. And I mean, that's what hit me, is that I know I need to do this for her because it's what I've devoted myself to, but the cost is so high. I don't know if I can do it.
The thing that really hit me in his physical performance was after she was gone, there was a 2 or 3 beat delay before she returned, and he reached out physically with his hand to the spot she had just been, like, oh, she's gone. Like, he knew what he was doing, but then when it happened, he was like, oh, it's real. Like, he had a very compressed, to your point, Cameron, he had a very compressed timeline to feel every emotion that he needed to feel, right? Because it was like, this is the option. And he knows, he's the only one that knows, like, this cannot continue how it is continuing. Like, I can't just leave these people in this fantasy world, even though it's hilarious. It's it's also very, you know, like, there's a lot of pressure on me as the only not fantasy person here. So it's not that hilarious. And it's just like, we knew it was coming. We knew there was going to be a moment where somebody would make him choose between his daughter and the crew. And we knew, logically, that he would have to choose the crew, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is perfectly executed because it gives us closure for what we want for the daughter. We want her to be happy. We want her to have an entire life, which we find out she gets to do. To your point, Josh, my reaction to this was bad. It was like, I have tears streaking down my face. My wife, like, made a move where I was like, oh, she's going to wake up. And then I'm going to have to be like, it's Star Trek. I'm sorry. I have to do it because there's a little girl. I did put on Twitter, I don't drink, so I'm going to have to go get a cheeseburger after this. And it was just like, there was a lot to it that I was like, man, you know, this was on Thursday, and I was like, this is insane. And this episode, I'm really glad I didn't watch this before work. I waited till after work.
Yeah, you learned your lesson on that.
But apparently, yeah. So apparently I left the app running because the next day, my wife was like, so how was Star Trek this week? And I was like, oh, wow. So remember the little girl I told you about? And she was like, I saw it. Okay. I saw the whole thing. I was trying to get you to talk about it. And like, it's so sad. I mean, like, I get it. It's happy, but it's so sad. And I was like, I know, right? She's like, she's not watching the series with me. She doesn't know the whole story. She just knows what I told her, which was there's a sick little girl and she's stuck in the pattern buffer, right? Like, so she was like, yeah, I saw it. And I was like, okay, but it's okay, because she's like, no, I saw it. She comes back. She's a grown up. She had a whole life. It's great. Like, I get it, but it's so sad. And I was like, you're right. It is very sad.
Even just him talking to, like, explaining the story of the book where the king has to give up the, whatever it is, the crystal, life crystal or whatever it is, and how he has to do it so the soul will survive. Like, him just pulling that out and being like, this is what's going on. It's just like your book. It got me, like, really, really good, because he's trying to tell her that everything is going to be okay. You can go, you can do whatever you need to do, even though it's just going to kill me, like, every ounce of me.
Yeah, I mean, two things. So the other kind of bit of acting I thought that worked really well ties into the most recent Green Shirt episode we just did, The First Duty, where Wes has a near-death experience and his mother, Beverly Crusher, the Beverly Crusher of it all, comes in and she starts stroking him. And we had some discussion on the podcast about how realistic that was or not. She's just petting her son. And you see that with Mbinga and his daughter in the scene. He's just like, his thumbs are just rubbing her. He's just like holding her, getting his last few moments of like physical contact with her. I thought was really powerful. And then to both Josh's and Jesse's points here. Yeah, at the beginning. So, okay, it's going to be the Mbenga scene. Is this the episode? Is this the Mbenga episode? And there's talk of both. He has to make a choice. He has a choice to give her up or save the crew or whatever. But he also says, maybe one day we can write our own ending. So I'm like, which is it going to be? Are we going to get the Lorenzo's oil to write their own ending and he saves her through science? Or is it going to be the choice and he has to accept death? And somehow, and because of Star Trek, we get both.
We get both.
They pulled it out. Both. They were able to tell us a story about accepting death, accepting loss. But because it's science fiction, we still get that kind of bittersweet, emotional, happy-ish ending. Well done.
But to Josh's point, that could be like the emotional Bermuda's Triangle now in space, right? Like, don't you have to tell people, like, hey, don't go into this nebula. It's sentient.
It's going to wreck your world.
Yeah. Like, what is the locality? I need to know how it all works, but like, I'm happy with it to just being like, it's a sci-fi thing. Don't worry about it. Yeah. I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like they purposefully left it open so that they can, you know, maybe next season or the season after go like, oh, hey, somebody, you know, is messing with that nebula or something, and he'll be like forced to choose between something again. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I'm not saying I'm looking for that, but I'm saying I feel like they left that thread just open enough on purpose so that if they want to, they could revisit it.
Yeah, they actually wrapped up a story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which TNG was guilty of not doing a lot, but they leave something out there hanging like, oh, they could totally come back to this, and so rarely did.
If I may, I just thought of the one character button I would want in this. As we cut to Ortegas in her quarters, and she's just caressing a letter opener and goes, Starfall.
I love that name for a sword.
I love that name.
I know a lot of people have been waiting for it for a long time on Strange New Worlds. It was really nice to see them finally explore the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Finally. Because we've never seen it before on this show in 8 episodes. Certainly not in 6 of the previous episodes. Yeah.
Certainly hasn't been like the core theme of the whole season.
Yeah.
I think my last favorite thing of this episode was probably the Swamp of Infinite Death, which has to be a sideways reference to the Princess Bride. You know, outside of Ortegas, Sir Adia being a mixture of the Dread Pirate Roberts and Inigo Montoya.
I am still waiting for Melissa Navia to tell me on Twitter how many times she said Inigo Montoya's line while practicing her sword fighting.
It would have to be nearly constant, I would think.
It's larger than one, yeah.
Because I'm me and my sense of humor is what it is, I absolutely imagined a version of the scene where the princess went with them through the Swamp of Infinite Death and her puppy gets sucked down into the swamp and she has to tearfully let it go. And they just are like, hey, we're going to do it to you again, guys. Remember your childhood?
I think the swamps are probably the restrooms, right? Yes.
I was going to say, what part of the ship are the Swamps of Infinite Death? Right, because it can't be engineering. It's not that corridor that they're in. Like
Cetacean Ops.
Ambo Jitsu Ring.
Yeah.
No, wait. This is pre-Cetacean Ops.
Oh, that's right.
John,
it is.
Producer John from Star Trek's Open Pike Night podcast.
I'm not supposed to know about Cetacean Ops yet.
You don't, which is
I don't.
Good.
Perfect. So then my theory is correct.
Yes, it's definitely the bathrooms. It's the public bathrooms. It's 100% the bathrooms.
I would just like to have seen her, the princess, get stuck in the Jeffries tubes in that giant dress of hers.
Yeah.
A full-on cartoon, like, we can't go through because the princess has plugged the Jeffries tube. And then Cameron would get to make so many plugged Jeffries tube jokes. So I could see why you would want that. I could see that. This episode managed to be just a pile of fun on top of just stomping directly on my heart.
Yeah.
I think the last thing I wanted to bring up was just Hemmer again was awesome. And like you were saying, he really embraced that role of, you know, being in Dungeons and Dragons. And I really, for whatever reason at the end, because this happens in so many different like cartoons and movies, but when he comes into the room and he goes, perhaps I could be of assistance. I couldn't help but laugh because he was so excited to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to help here. I got this. Yeah. I got this. Science and assistance.
Yes. I thought about that. I was like, oh, that line, but it kind of works because of everything did, that's led up to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He strikes that balance of like, I'm going to have fun with this while making fun of this at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. He could have been very recriminatory when Mbanga's like, oh, by the way, my daughter's been in the pattern buffer. It's like, hey, wait a goddamn minute. Is that why you yelled at me when we were all in trouble earlier? But he's like, yeah, okay, that's not important anymore. Also, to all you Andorian and Enar fans out there, we got the antenna movement finally.
Oh, it's so good.
Good to see because we know they can move them.
Hemmer has stated before his purpose is to fix what is broken, which I think is just wonderful that he continues to embody that spirit. Let me help. But I have to mention that I think the line of this episode is his reading of I am a wizard, because he could have said, oh, I'm already blind, right? Because that was the point that he was making. Close your eyes or you'll go blind. Or he could have said, I'm an Enar, right? Which would have gone, okay, that's the same thing as saying, look, I'm already blind. Or he could have said, I don't have to worry about that. He could have said a bunch of stuff, but he said, I am a wizard. And it was just like, ah, this is so good. And I had a real life Star Trek friend point out to me that this is the new version of the you're a Jedi Frodo meme, right? Because he's holding what basically amounts to a sonic screwdriver that acts like a lightsaber while wearing a fantasy costume and proclaiming to be a wizard. So
he's who I want to dress up as. Yeah. Any like con I go to or Renaissance fair, I would want to be Hemmer from this episode. Blue, carrying around just like a lighter.
Blue face paint is going to be back in style at Halloween stores. How did we get two mention of Halloween stores in this episode? Oh, never mind. I know how.
Yeah.
Thank you to all of our guests on the Open Pike Night stage. We wouldn't be the podcast we are without you, and we love our growing audience. It's time to rate this episode. Josh, the way we rate this is ranking all of our episodes from favorite to least favorite, or vice versa, however you choose. Jesse, you went second last time. Let's have you go first.
This episode has climbed very quickly in my rankings. I still put Memento Mori at the top of this just because I feel like I've been waiting years to see that episode and I didn't even know it. And I really love Children of the Comet, so I have that up there. We have Kirk being Kirk. We have Uhura being, you know, neurodivergent but very good at what she does. We have the Mahanit worshipping aliens in that episode. I love them. I am going to slot this in at my number three. This comes in at number three for me, and then after that I will go episode 6, 7, 5, 3, and 1. Again, 3 and 1 are not bad. They're just, I have to rank all of the episodes in an order. So those are my least favorite in a series of episodes that I have nothing but love for.
I know the way you guys rate it, but I mean, this is probably my second favorite episode of the season, I would say.
Okay.
I wouldn't be able to rate all the other ones. Other
you
than
give us your top three.
I think the top one, and I know, I don't know, it's weird, but last week, the Serene Squall was really, really fun for me for whatever reason. I don't know.
Pirates.
I don't know what it was, but it's pirates, and probably because the Doctor was in it a lot more. Maybe. I just have a big crush on that Doctor.
Oh, on Nurse Chapel, yeah.
if it wasn't that one, I would probably say Children of the Comet would have been my favorite. So those are probably my top three.
All right.
This one being my second.
Cam, what about you?
Yeah, I came into this battling. Does this top Memento Mori as my favorite episode? At first, it kind of felt wrong because this is such a almost sidebar episode. Like, it's kind of like a holodeck episode, right? It's them acting goofy. It's not a standard. You wouldn't show someone this episode and be like, this is Strange New Worlds. This is what to expect. I feel like Memento Mori, you would show them and be like, this is kind of what you can come to expect from a Star Trek show. But I think just the emotional resonance of the end, that they were able to make that tonal shift so deftly, you know, you laughed, you cried some more, you had that amazing final shot. I'm going to have to, it slips just in above. Memento Mori is my number one. Then we get Memento Mori, then number episode 6, 1, 2, 7, 3, 5.
Okay. And I'm going to have to come in, agree with the whole group. This is my second favorite now, just behind Memento Mori. So my rankings are 4, 8, 6, 2, 5, 1, 3, and then 7 in dead last. Still. I went back and watched it again to see if I was being unfair, and like, nope.
See, and I liked that one. I don't know, man.
This is excellent, because now we can put up a poll on Twitter at OpenPike to see if anybody agrees that one of these three is their favorite episode, or what proportion of people agree that one of these three is their favorite episode. Josh, you have 7 as your favorite listed, right? Because I'll put that up. I want to make sure that we have the right
one. I loved the betrayal of that one.
All right. It was sudden. It was not inevitable, but it was sudden. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on another Open Pike Night. Jesse, now that we are 80% of the way through season 1 of Strange New Worlds and Open Pike Night, how can our listeners get on stage and share their thoughts, feelings, or jokes about Strange New Worlds?
You know, producer John T. Bolds, I feel like if you could plug me into some sort of machine that harnesses my disappointment every time that you tell me how far through this season we are to, I don't know, keep a city afloat, I feel like you would do that. I feel like that's a sacrifice you'd be willing to make, personally. But to answer your question, the easiest way for folks to get on stage here at Open Pike Night is to go to Twitter and follow me at Open Pike and click the little button right below our profile picture that says Start Reading. That will get you signed up for the Open Pike Night Crew Manifest, which is a free weekly email reminder to send in your 90-second or fewer audio clip to openpike@gmail.com. It does include a link to do so. Remember, if you sign up for that, check your junk and spam folders, because, of course, our newsletter is neither of those things.
And Josh, how can people find more of you?
Best way to find me right now is through QuestMe. It's our Star Wars podcast. We're talking about Kenobi right now. Cameron was on it a couple weeks ago. Jesse is on it this week to talk about the finale of Kenobi. So check that out. You can find us pretty much anywhere you can listen to podcasts. Just search for QuestMe, and we're on Twitter at QuestMeTMA. That's probably the best way right now, for sure.
Excellent. Cam, how about you?
Yeah, you can find more of my musings on TNG, if you're not getting enough of them here, at Green Shirt, A Newbie's Trek Through the Next Generation, where I am watching The Next Generation for the first time, at GreenShirt87. We'll find us on Twitter, the best social media place to find us, and you can listen to us wherever you're listening to this podcast.
And Jesse, where can people hear more of your dulcet tones?
If for whatever reason you haven't had enough of me, you can also follow me and my other show on Twitter at SuddenButt. That, of course, is the handle for Sudden But Inevitable, which is the show where we turn longtime friends into first-time fans. Right now, I am making Josh and Ricky D watch Death Note, which is an anime about a high schooler with a notebook that can kill people. And Josh and Ricky D happen not to be anime fans. So that's sort of why we're doing it. We started with Firefly, which Josh had never seen before. Then we went through two flavors of Cowboy Bebop. And we are looking toward the future. The 20th anniversary of Firefly is this year. So if you want to listen to Sudden But Inevitable, use whatever app you are using to listen to Open Pike Night and just Google it. You will find it there. And you can follow it, as I said, on Twitter at Sudden But.
You can find me on Twitter at John T. Bolds. It's been a long night, and the Open Pike Night crew needs to get our sleep. We volunteered tomorrow to help clean up litter in the Swamp of Infinite Deaths. Please be sure to clean up after yourselves, or we will call in the Crimson Guard. And be sure to tip your servers. You can go anywhere you want, but you can't stay here.